to call to order the February 25th study session planning commission. Any announcements? Except for we're honored to have the Carrie through Karen with us for the first time.
Yes.
Honored.
Honored.
Yes. It lasts about one meeting.
I know the reality. You've observed it from over there.
Yeah, enjoy
it.
She used to be on planning commission.
Yeah.
7 years.
7 years?
Yeah. And is that when there was 9 on the commission? Because it's kind of like we were at 9 and we went to 7. So.
I'm not sure. It was. She was on when we still were 9.
Okay.
Nice. That'd be hard to do.
It was interesting.
It was fun at times. And there were times that they wouldn't let us sit together because we kept making faces when we were speaking.
Do we have
to
read? Should we?
Too late noted.
Just a few reminders. Some of these I have probably already mentioned. I'm not sure what we have on the docket for the March 10th meeting yet. I know we need to adopt findings for Kestrel. We're not sure if we have anything else that night, but we hopefully will know shortly. But we're still on for the cottage housing tour, March 24th. Anna, do you remember when we're doing that? Is that at 4 o'clock?
Well, I think it was at 2 or 3.
And we're doing it earlier when it's light so we can see.
I can look at what we discussed last time in the emails.
Okay. And then I think I mentioned the last time that the public hearing before the council on the Plaza Standard Amendment is going to be March 17th. Honorable Chair, Mr. Pierce, will be out of town.
I'm going to be away on a frolic and detour.
Yeah. You've agreed to write a letter to the council summarizing the recommendation?
Yeah, if you think it'd be useful.
Okay.
We'll just do a brand of Sutter.
Can I just ask for a clarification? So the meeting on Tuesday, March 24th, will not be here?
Will not be here. We're going to go out to the Laurel Street cottages.
Okay, so is that when we meet at, like,
7
o'clock?
Well, we're
going to
suck because we're
going to sit.
We're early.
Yeah. I think it's 3:30 or 3.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's daylight savings time, too. So we have an extra hour.
Was there a notice on that?
No, because I think originally it was going to be in February, and then because they were trying to tie up the site.
But that's in addition to the Planning Commission meeting that night or in lieu?
In lieu.
Okay.
And then also in your packet, we were recognized, I guess it was best practices by the National Association of Home Builders for the cottage housing ordinance. And so I remember getting a call from, I think, one of the architectural firms that was putting together this document and asking a lot of questions about our cottage housing ordinance. So it's nice. You guys were a big part of that, so... Congratulations. And I think that's it.
Okay. Anything else? We have no one for the public forum?
No.
We have one discussion item tonight, the draft amendments for open space standards. We did get a couple of comment letters. Both of them commented that it really is a substantive change that we're thinking about eliminating the major recreation facility potential bonus. The other stuff I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. They seem to think that we're trying to reduce density or reduce the number of housing units, and it's not this is about the would be important to make that clear to the council. So, Maria, do you want to?
I think Bill was going to start off.
Okay.
Just briefly, because it's been a little over a year since we started down this road, and we've tried to stick with it, and it got probably a little bit more involved as we moved on, but. You know, looking back in terms of really this how this came about, also in the last couple of years, we're seeing a lot more multifamily development, especially larger multifamily development. And so like Phillips Corner here on Main and North Mountain, and then Lower Mountain, and then the one up off Siskiyou Boulevard, and then Garfield. I think all those projects, some of them were not only multifamily projects where you would have the 8% recreation requirement, but they are also multifamily subdivisions of greater than 10 lots. So then you'd have the open space requirement. So we started seeing these projects that had a blend of the two requirements, and then whether right or wrong, staff over the last several years, in order to provide flexibility to the design team and the developers, essentially looked at that the requirement could be met with a blend of common space and also private outdoor space. And it was, you know, brought to our attention during discussions in this room and even during public hearings that really, if you look at the definitions, that's inconsistent application. So this really was an opportunity to, you know, straighten the code out. It even on a couple, at least one appeal, I think the Garfield appeal to the council, issues of open space and potential conflicts in the ordinance came up. So it became increasingly difficult for staff in terms of our meetings with property owners, what actually was the application, true application of the current standard, and that we needed to change it and make it clear and make it consistent. So that's what Maria has been working on. And, you know, we also took, you know, really we wanted to make sure that the standard reflected the practice in place by allowing flexibility for it to not only have common area but private open space as well, because that seemed like that was a desire not only of the commission but design teams that we dealt with. So but also I think over the last couple of years on some of the retreats, we've gone out to some of these developments and we also looked at how the common areas actually had been designed, and it seemed there was also a need to maybe be a little bit clearer in terms of what could be included in those common areas and what should not be included, because they were more utilitarian, but they weren't really part of the common. So this was an opportunity to clear up, you know, general standards as well. So it's probably not the most glamorous ordinance, but it's very needed in terms of a consistency and efficiency standpoint from staff, commission, and applicants.
Just when we put the other 8 pages out.
That's right, I didn't mention that.
Because there, you know, one thing that Maria has done is gone through the code and looked at every instance where open space is cited in the code. And we need to make that consistent with what these new definitions are. So it's a big cleanup. I don't think there's anything horribly substantive in that. We'll take a look at it. Our subcommittee will take a look at that, right?
Okay. So I was going to go over 4 things, recap some of the examples we've talked about, do a summary of the amendments, touch on the open space terminology with which Chair Pierce just mentioned, and then throw out some ideas for next steps. So when is open space required in residential development? It's required for multifamily developments, attached single-family development / subdivisions in single-family zones, and cottage housing. I'm not going to cover cottage housing, just the first 3. So this is an example we looked at, and some of the planning commissioners visited on Percy Street, where they had, it's in R3, one of the multifamily zones, and where they had that deck area, which I think was around 500 square feet, and then they had that big one landscaped area below, and then they also had private decks. So that's just an example of multifamily development. I just kind of whizzed past the site plan if you want to see that at some point. And then
and that one, the open space, a lot of that open space, the common space is structure.
Well, they got a bonus for a density bonus for extra common space. So they did actually, I'm looking at my numbers here, more than twice as much as was required. Okay. And they did about probably a half, a little less than a half in private decks, and then the rest in that common area.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the site plan of the same development. This is a couple of examples of the developments Bill mentioned where you have the subdivisions in a multifamily zone, so you have attached housing on its own lot, but it's more dense and it's developed in a multifamily zone. And this was one actually back in the, from the early 2000s. So this was one where, again, half of it was in common space and half of it was in rear patios and porches. I think, like, up in this, no, oh, I don't know how to do this pointer. Well, up in the corners along the street were some of the common open spaces. And then this is the more recent example that Bill mentioned, similar type of development. And again, they did some common spaces, which are the bright green, and then also counted their porches and patios. And then finally, the sort of what's always been required to have common open space are the single-family detached developments. This is one, Elman Springs. It was approved in 2007 and built out in 2012, about 2015. Part of that was because of Lula Appeals. It was held up in court for a while. But this one, they have like over an acre of open space, and this is where that idea of you can put natural features in open space. So this first area here was wetland, and then the two areas here were the spring and wellhead. There's natural springs on the property. It's where the home and bath were. And then that was also part of the wellhead, I think, and then there was a grove of trees up in the corner. So that is the detached single family example. So that are all the different kinds of development we're trying to address. So I thought I'd start off in terms of the amendments, what stays the same. And I'll just qualify this by saying some of it is the parts that I have in italics are probably the way it's been interpreted by past planning commissions and staff. It might not necessarily be clearly written in the code, and then some of it is in the code now. So the amount of area required in the code is clear under site design review. You have to do 8%, and for attached single family developments over 10 units, you have to do 5%. So that's not changing, staying the same. When you do a development that requires both of those approvals, you don't have to add it up. You do the top percentage, which is 8%. That's not written in the code, but that's how it's been applied. And that is how it is in the draft. So things that I'm saying now are also in the proposed draft. And then in terms of the type of open space, the combination of common and private open space that's allowed based on that provision about the law about open space can include decks, patios, porches, yards, and similar areas. So that's clarified in the new draft. And then performance standards subdivisions of 10 units or more are required to provide common open space that's existing. And existing language says that common open space may include areas that preserve natural features and that the open space must provide suitable surface for human use. So those are all existing. In terms of the mechanics, it's in the current code now that the base density calculation is based on total area, including the open space area. And what's not in the code that's been applied is developments requiring site design review get a bonus after they've done the minimum of 8%. So that has never, I don't remember it being a problem before, just until recently someone started to submit an application in R3 and they were trying to argue they should get, it was a subdivision, townhome subdivision, and they were trying to argue they should get the density bonus after 5%, even though they were in a multifamily zone. So that was the first time that came up, but it seemed like it's probably something that should be clear in the order.
So you close that loophole.
Yeah, I believe so. Maintenance of open space is required by the property owner or association of owners. And the common open space improvement has to be done before final plat or issuance of a building permit, or they can defer it if it provides financial security. That's not in the code. That's been practiced for decades and decades, but we thought this I'd use similar language to the street standards that says basically that. We pulled it in this chapter. So the amendments. So probably the place to start is the definition. We revised the open space definition and then added definitions for common open space, private open space, and public open space. And then added definitions of ground floor and upper floor dwelling units. That's to go along with the private open spaces. Revised the definition of yard to take out the term open space. That was confusing. And this is actually not right. We used to have a definition of unbuildable and buildable area before 2015. Somehow those got dropped. So we put it back in. So that, and they're trying to clean them up a bit. So here's some graphics. We're thinking of putting something like this in the new code. It's still a little bit draft, so keep that in mind. But basically, in terms of common open space, that would be the area that all the residents have access to and can use. And then the private open space would be the... So the private open spaces are the decks. These are supposed to be like our patios, ground floor, private yard areas, the green spaces by the individual units, and then these little purplish colored are supposed to be balconies. So we try to incorporate all three kinds of private open space.
So can you just, I just have a question. So the setbacks, for example, the front setbacks along the street, those are colored green, but are those... I didn't see anything in there about whether the setback where you can't build is considered open space.
We have a standard that's in now, a draft standard that says you can't use the perimeter setback for common open space.
But you can use it for private.
Yeah, so on these units, for instance, you know where it's pretty common to put a rear yard for like an individual unit. They could use that for private yard area.
And then go all the way to the street with it.
Well, we have said front, I believe it says that you can't do the front. But
yeah, I didn't see where that, maybe we...
I think that needs to be cleaned up. I think it needs
to
work. I think we talked about it at a past commission meeting, whether or not this should be counted when it's a front yard. And I don't know that we really hammered that one out, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, so where there's a combination of private and public, I know in cottage there's a minimum dimension for what can be considered common open space. Does that carry into...
Yeah, we've included that.
It's 20 everywhere?
Yeah, that's what the draft is. Okay. So they're trying to give you a sense of the definitions. They're trying to capture the common and the private open space. So, proposed amendments for common open space. When you have a development that requires site design review, which again would be multifamily or attached single family, developments of 10 or more units would require that 50% of the required open space is common open space. So that's new language. And then the dimensions, new design standards, the minimum dimensions of that common open space would be required to be 20 feet. And a minimum total area of 400 square feet. The common open space would have to be outside of buffer or perimeter yard areas. The active use areas, I think it says such as grass or picnic areas, should be less than 5% slope. And then the fences and walls of the common open space can go up to 4 feet in height. So can't, in other words, can't put taller fences around open space. So this is just a drawing of that showing you have to have 50% of that in common open space, same stuff, just showing you graphically. And the ineligible areas are areas not meeting dimensional requirements in the buffer or primary yard area. Again, that's for common open space. And then pedestrian connections to individual units. That was one of the concerns that came up at a planning commission meeting. And then some sort of other, I think, issues that are kind of hanging out there. There's a surfacing standard. I think the Planning Commission, which says that you have to have a surface that's suitable for human use, and the Planning Commission has discussed or looked at or debated having some flexibility in that standard. So we put an idea for a suggestion option in there. And then credit for proximity to a public park. The Planning Commission at the October 22nd meeting, which is the last meeting, looked at that, took it out. Staff's recommending that you consider keeping that in. And one idea might be to reduce the percentage the way it's written right now. Can you reduce your common open space requirement by half if you're within a fourth of a mile apart? I mean, you could say at least by 25%, or, you know, play around with those numbers. And then an issue that we haven't talked about but staff notices quite a bit is utility vaults and pedestals, and I will show you an example.
Okay, Maria, before you get too far
past okay.
that, for that public space that's closer to a park, one of the things I was looking at when we looked at it was, instead of just looking at reducing the amount that you have to give, we could also move it where it's actually closer. I thought a quarter of a mile.
Yeah.
As you get older, that becomes more of a problem. So I'm saying if you cut it down to something less than that.
Like an eighth, maybe.
Like an eighth. Yeah. I would feel a lot better about it because trying to get, as you did, we are living in a generation that gets older and older and older. And you have to take that into consideration if you want to actually make it part of that development. Also, you got to walk all across the development also. A quarter of a mile is normally going to start at the edge of the development rather than at the furthest unit of the way. So I would say if you cut it at least to an eighth and kick it around for a while.
The other question I have on that topic was, how does that relate to the dimensional 400 square foot minimum requirement? Are we going to run into a situation where giving the 50% credit all of a sudden means they do or do not have to do one 400 square foot dimensional open space? Are we saying that no longer applies?
I ran the numbers, and I don't have it in front of me now. I have it on a later slide. But I actually, 400 square feet is the minimum for any individual common open space. But if you look at the minimum numbers that will be required for R2 and R3 development, it's almost, there would be no one open space that small. So if you just bear with me, I'll still go back around and kind of like it's that slide. So this back to the utility, this actually addresses several issues. This is the open space we just inspected in Verde Village in the single family portion. It was counted as open space. We went out there and there's utility pedestals. And then I think it also addresses the issue of, you know, is this a usable...
Light structures.
Is it a usable surface? You know, that whole issue of bark versus... or mulch and bushes versus somewhere, can you really use that as somebody who lives there? So one of the things we're suggesting maybe we think of is having an explicit standard that says you can't count the area where the utility vaults and pedestals are.
What about, that's good, but if they bisect an area, like, you have to do it a little bit more carefully than that, because if they're running through a space, like you would have to say that the 400 square feet has to be contiguous without them being in the middle of, like, in a protuberance into it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to do that. I'm wondering what leads to that discussion of an alternate standard for surfacing. If beefing that up some might address that issue.
Maybe. I could just see a lawn that was shaped like a C with those things in the middle of it.
Yeah. Okay. So then for private open space, I mean, again, now it says that you can do decks, patios, porches, and count them as open space, so it's making that explicit to private open space. And a minimum size, basically whether it's ground floor or upper floor, 48 square feet, 6 feet in depth. So whether it's a balcony or a patio or yard at the ground level, that would be the minimum size. You can't have it within 12 feet of refuse and recycling areas if you're on the ground floor. And then you can't count walkways to private units. storage areas or bicycle racks. That's to address some of the cases we're receiving. People park bike patios when we go out. It's taken up by a bike rack structure, you know, or bike rack, something like that.
Or you could just say, or anything within 2 feet of a utility structure. You know, so they have to draw a boundary around the utility.
Yeah, the problem is that's just for private open space, and those tend to be in common areas. So this is just showing, you know, areas that would be in decks, decks, patios, and porches. If you count, the small porches on the front would be big enough, so that area would address those, the area requirement. Second store balconies could count if they meet that area requirement, and then the private yard areas and the walkways. So really you have kind of three different kinds of private open space that could be counted.
So I thought that the private yard requirement, I guess, for cottages was 8 feet minimum depth.
I think you're right. I mean, we weren't exactly trying to match everything to cottage houses.
But so smaller than, so 6 feet basically. Do you want this input? I'm sorry. I just realized I'm just kind of.
It doesn't matter to me. It's probably kind of a discussion, you know, for the whole commission.
6 feet is more of a passageway than a space. So if a private yard could be 6 feet deep, it's not really functional as a space to be in if it's on the ground floor. I think it works for a patio or a porch out a door that's suspended, but it doesn't work on the ground because it's contiguous. I mean, even though it says it's not counted as, but it's still, like this, the last point kind of addresses that, but still a 6 foot deep space, if it's next to a building, will end up being a corridor. Probably.
End up being a what?
A corridor. It'll be circulation instead of, oops, excuse me, it'll be circulation instead of useful space.
Roger. Before we got into the, we had a project once, Lynn had brought this up, the problem with the space. That was when there was no requirement at all. It was up to the discretion of the developer whether they wanted to do the patio or the, so we started discussing sizes. And I don't have it with me, but I'm not sure who I sent it to, but I went in and looked at about 10 different ordinances, and usually the size of your patio and your upstairs deck, in most ordinances, it's related to the number of bedrooms, and there's a square footage that applies, and the sizes and the dimensions, and I just can't remember if 6 was a minimum or not. I kind of remember that it did, but that whole thing was, it depended on the size of the unit, which was based on the bedrooms, and then that was figured out for that space that you had to have so that they could either have a patio area or up on the second deck a usable area. But I've got it someplace at home. I looked at about, I don't know, 10 different ordinances, and they were primarily in apartments. The ones that usually I find that are pretty good are the ones that are also involved with university towns like Davis, Santa Barbara, like that. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a common, pretty common measurement for decks and, you know, for decks and balconies. I can lay down.
Yeah. You can roll on it.
So that was really it as far as what stays the same and what's being amended. Open space terminology, Roger mentioned, we've gone through and done a first draft of all the terms. Also, besides open space, looked at common park and recreation because they're sort of intertwined and used the same in some cases. So I think at this point, it's really needing it to have the subcommittee and then revising it for the public hearing. And next step, which kind of leads into that, would be to do that. and then get ready for a public hearing. We're hoping to do that in April. And in terms of the issues, I just wanted to have this up for the commission to look at, kind of things I've identified that we're looking for feedback on, or that surfacing standard. One I forgot to mention was allowing outdoor coverings and structures. We've allowed that in the past in common open spaces and private open spaces, like in a common open space, a gazebo, or, you know, some kind of arbor or something like that. And then the utility vault issue. One of the things I didn't mention is the single family subdivisions haven't had design standards for them, the common open space. So I think it probably makes sense if we put something in multifamily to have the same standards in the single family subdivisions. And then the common open space definition, I realized today that the last sentence, I believe, should be deleted, because it talks about natural areas can count as open space, but that conflicts with the cottage housing standards. So I think it's better to locate that in the actual standards section, which is already in there anyway.
Which section are you going to?
The common open space definition.
Yeah. Ownership and maintenance?
No, on page 10 under the common open space definition, the second sentence talks about common open space may include areas that provide for preservation or enhancement of natural features. That, for cottage housing, it specifically cannot count those areas. So I think it should be deleted from there. And then if you look on page 3H, on page 3H at the top, it's pulled in there already as a standard. And it's also on page 7 under 3 for performance standards. I don't think taking it out.
Hey, one of our goals in looking at these definitions was to try to make the definitions pretty general, and then make them too prescriptive, and then too more but specific, because these definitions are going to apply throughout the code.
Yeah.
And then if there are, in these specific design review sort of, you know, the PSO overlay, the residential density bonus, and the site design standards, the three things where this all comes up. Really put those design standards in there that, you know, and that's one thing that we say in the definition of open space, that it's, you know, open to the, you know, open to the sky, and, you know, primarily those structures unless otherwise specified in the code. So, you know, the specific sections of the code can have that more specific direction. At least that's our idea.
Right, it did leave it open for putting gazebos and such, I thought.
I don't think we've addressed that yet, so we probably need to add something.
Right, because I thought it had alluded to it somewhere. I don't remember exactly where I saw it. I didn't mark it in my notes.
I think I saw the same thing.
Right, and I think it's in there. It allows you, if you wish, or something. It says depending on the population of the development. That's where it was.
Oh, is that new? That's on page 2E.
And I thought that was a good idea. I looked and said yes. Just like the one that we were going to get, the outdoor gazebo with the fire pit and everything around, and they built it to never. Just dump the extra.
I have just two little drafting issues that I just wanted to mention before we get into the substantive discussion. On page 2, section 2B, dimensional standards, is awkward as written. Common open space dimensions shall be a minimum of 20 feet. I mean, that just is sort of a little incomprehensible. Dimensions shall be a minimum of 20 feet. I don't know what that means, but I think elsewhere you had used somewhat clearer language, something like shall have no dimension that is less than 20 feet.
I think that's better. I usually see it as no dimension less
than. Less than. But then you have to deal with the fact that and shall have a minimum area of 400 because you've got a shall not in it and then a mandate in the second part of it. So it's just a drafting thing, but I think that could be clear. The other thing is the use of shall in the code versus shall be eligible or may. And as I pondered that, for example, in section B1 on that very same page, pedestrian connections, pedestrian walkways, and multi-use paths shall contribute toward meeting the required common space. So if you're talking to a developer, you're basically telling that person, you shall use these for your open space requirement. If you're talking to the planning department, you're telling him you must allow that to be counted. So it's almost a question of who you're talking to here. And I always think these codes are talking to people on the outside. And really what we want to say is you don't have to count them as long as you have other ways of meeting the requirement, right? But if that's what they want to use to be counted, the planning department is required to allow it. And I felt like that was true in a multiple, it's sort of like the drafter of the code is thinking about what the planning commission is required to count, but the reader of the code is thinking about what they have to do.
So you want to say that walkways, whatever, may be included.
Yeah, or shall be eligible to be covered, or, I would think of saying may, but then I agree that it creates the question of whether that's a discretionary standard. So you probably don't want to say may be counted. But the idea is that they can be counted if that's how the planner, the developer, wants them to be used.
If it's a 20-foot minimum space, then you could also just say that those things are allowable in the open space.
Yeah.
Well, I think the discussion was what led to this is there have been quite a few subdivisions where they had an open space, but then they provided pedestrian connections to like a nearby park.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to make a disincentive to do those because they got to count those as their open space. I mean, they're generally very popular with people in the neighborhoods. So,
And they're 20 feet wide?
No, but what this is trying to say is that after you do that first 400 square foot area that you're required to do,
you get to use these other things if you want to.
That's the one thing you don't want to end up with is that no dimension shall be less than 20 feet because if you're trying to get 400 square feet, then you want 20 by something or 15 by something. You want 20 by something and it doesn't always have to be 20 by 20. It's not what you're after. So you don't want to say you have to have a 20-foot area as the minimum or as the max or as the definitive number.
Yeah, what do you
think? Leave it the way it is, basically, because it already says you must have an area that's at least 20 feet. The minimum dimension is 20 feet. But you don't want to define both dimensions, is what I'm trying to say. You only want to define one. In other words, there must be an area that's at least 20 feet. And that allows, because that's what it already says.
So you're saying it could be 30 by 15 or some other number.
Right.
Not everything has to be a minimum.
20 by 20. Because if you say that, you're 20 by 20.
Right.
You're stuck.
You shouldn't say it's no dimension less than 20 because it could be configured.
Right. You don't want to have 40 by 1, but,
You have to set a minimum somewhere, though, or you end up with these strips.
You won't get anything that strips. Maybe your 6 foot is your minimum.
You can have one, one...
For common open space, 6 foot is, like, if you allowed that, I think you could end up with some really bad spaces.
Yeah. I think you've got to have some minimum dimension.
You may need a minimum dimension, but you don't want to have it such as you always end up with 20 by 20.
Yeah, it may not be 20, maybe 15.
This square footage covered it, I thought.
This is one of the things that I was one of the two things I was concerned about with it. And I've done my own designs where you do have a path where you're using a lawn area to go through. And the part is it, what is the intent? You know, the intent is, for instance, I can take my little dog and take a walk on this area, you know, for it to be a 20 by 20 and, you know, our 20 foot seemed to me to be quite a bit. I was totally with you, like if we could reduce that one minimum width.
We were looking at where we use these is, again, to connect neighborhoods when there isn't a street to a park or another neighborhood or something like that. Ashland Village Subdivision has several of them. And so I think the danger of being too prescriptive is you might eliminate some really well-used, loved neighborhood connectors.
Right.
If it's not necessarily talking about paths within an open space, it's talking about...
Can't you just require connections like you did on Hellman Springs? There was a required 8-foot wide or 12-foot wide public access between open space and the street. It seems like those elements, those connective tissue, you know, connective things should just be required on their own and not count as common open space.
I think you would see fewer happen if you did it that stringent.
No, I think you want to be able to count them because you do want them to happen. Mm-hmm. And you want to allow them to get, they won't happen unless you give credit for it, period.
You require
so we want to allow them to make that connection.
Didn't we used to do it without it counting as the common space?
No.
It was always...
Well, I mean, it's also in the street standards. I mean, we have kind of double duty. We say when you're not doing a street connection, then provide another kind of connection if there's something, you know, nearby.
Mm-hmm.
But, they've generally been allowed to be counted as open space. And again, you're usually talking about fairly large amounts of open space that are already provided centrally, and then these are additional.
The other, you know, you have mentioned up there, you know, the very top thing, surfacing, and that's been kind of a big thing with me, and it came up at our last Planning Commission meeting, and I wonder whether we have more discretion now with these than we had a month ago or a couple weeks ago. Do you know the issue that what I objected to? Because I think, Carrie wasn't here, but my issue was when they were looking at a pollinator garden or anything like that, to me, is part of a usable common open space. And I think that's going to be more, and particularly in that development, when you're so close to just a huge lawn area that is less than an eighth of a mile away,
right,
you know, to that lawn area. And I didn't feel like I could make an amendment to the motion that would allow them to utilize that. We had to make them use like a usable open space. And I'm not sure that we have a really good definition for what a usable space is.
I mean, if you say pollinator garden, aren't you just opening it up to any landscaped area? Being treated as common open space?
Well, you know, I think with this one, I mean, I look at it from a design standpoint. It's like an area like that, having a bench somewhere in it, a pathway going through it, not just like the specific one.
Is the assumption that people are going to garden in there? Is that why it would be?
No. It comes down to what we came to when we did the Hellman Bass subdivision, because there was that wetland at the side, and we ended up saying, okay, you can use that, as I kind of remember a lot of years ago, as long as you have like a pathway there and there's a bench there and you can really look at, you know, the wetland, but it's totally unusable. Never has been usable. It's unusable now, was unusable then. You know, but it was, and they don't have any other, like, I mean, they have ridiculously small little tiny lawns.
There's a huge open space on Randy.
On what?
On the Randy side at Hellman.
Okay, well, yeah, that. But isn't that mostly like a...
It's a treed grass part area.
Yeah, it seems like there were shrubs and rocks and stuff in that one. Well, anyway.
I would just worry about opening this up where all of a sudden any landscape is going to be considered common open space.
Well, I guess my question was not so much that is whether we have discretion, you know, and saying, okay, I think this, you know, because again, Troy disagreed with me with that one, but... You know, I look at it as being a benefit rather than trying to make something where, okay, we have, like, you know, basically 400 square feet of usable surface. Yeah, when you had, you know, a couple hundred yards away, just this huge, you know, lawn area along the Bear Creek.
So the credit for proximity to a park, public park, would help... Part of that,
yeah.
Which is in here,
and then the
other on page two. So let me walk you through just what's in here. Answer your question. At the bottom of page two, under E, surfacing. That's the existing language. That's what's in the code now.
Mm-hmm.
And then under that, there's an option that staff suggested, so that might be one place to start or combine the two.
Okay, I guess my question, because I caught on to that. I mean, I like that part. And the question is this like new that we would not have considered like 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
I think 2 weeks ago the plan was a fairly dense planning plan, and what I recall did not show how humans would move through it. I mean, there wasn't, I don't believe, any...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't think it was a real human use space. It was a real usable space.
I would be worried about little strips of too. If you have no minimum dimensional requirements outside of the one block, whatever that looks like, it just seems to me that people are just going to start counting things like when we visited that development on North Mountain,
mm-hmm.
where they treated as common open space these little planning bits, you know, that were next to the sidewalk. And that was sort of what they had as common.
This is where that 20-foot minimum takes care of that.
Well, no, because basically if they meet that 20-foot minimum elsewhere, then if they've got additional square footage that they have to satisfy to get to the 8% or 5%, they just start counting these little strips of landscape, you know, next to sidewalks.
Yeah, there isn't any usable.
That's not usable.
No, but they also never did the 20-foot minimum either.
Right.
Yeah, well, we didn't require it then.
Right. Exactly.
But, you know, just if they get away with just doing the block of 400 square feet, then the whole rest of the requirement goes out the window if they can just use little strips of landscape here and there.
Well, I mean, we have a standard in there that you can't count individual walkways to individual units.
No, but it's the landscaped area next to the walkway.
Yeah.
They have a little strip of mulch with a few plants in it. That was what we saw.
Are you talking about the surface then?
Well, the surface and the lack of usability, that it's a visual feature, but it's not usable other than a visual feature.
So in the case, could you, under the optional standard, do you provide a pollinator garden as long as it incorporated
seating,
benches, and
yeah.
other areas of respite for people to go in. Right. And that's what I think lacked even with
exactly.
the previous plan.
Yeah. Well, I think that was more a suggestion on my part that if you wanted to mark and last, and if you really wanted to, you know, I saw validity in going that way. They didn't design it that way.
Mm-hmm. They didn't design it with one path through it. That was that housing project that was named Cottage. And they had laid out and it had plenty of area.
Yeah.
That basically they didn't have the bench. They had the pathway, but it was just one little street through, and then they used everything for the public land part, which could work. And they put in the benches and the rest area. And unfortunately, I would believe for where we live in the summertime, a bench in the sun sucks.
Yeah.
So if you're going to say just benches and rest areas, it needs to be
true.
You need to add something in there to allow it to have shade. I don't know exactly what you do.
Yeah, because thinking again about that one example where we were all sort of shocked at what the open space had turned into in that development, which wasn't really what we all thought common open space was. And they had benches. They had a few of these benches, but just sort of stuck into a little planning strip. Who's going to sit there? You know, I mean, it just seemed gratuitous and not really usable.
I think that's one of the reasons that we're even doing this. Because of that project.
Because of that project, yeah.
It's the one that's right here at the corner of North, right in back of the old church, that development right next to the mountain. You know, just a block from here.
Yeah.
And it was another one, Miles and Mark's.
Yeah, I know which one is.
Okay.
I kind of like the language in there in the existing code, though, about, you know, no mulch and other ground covers that aren't suitable for human use.
I like that also. Somehow they need to come up with the surface that you can use.
What about the combo?
A combination of the two. Maybe take out the tree growth.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we need to.
That's addressed under that natural feature standard.
Yeah, nobody's going to plant a tree growth anyway.
The problem with all this stuff, it's not easy to walk on. Or play on, or lay on. Or sit on a particular thing.
It's just nasty.
You need something. But you want a usable surface, a usable surface. No mulch. No bark. No rocks.
Yeah, I like the. I'm not sure that in terms of the improvements we want to require. Do we want to require those outdoor recreation areas, and benches and seating? And
well, this is again that use of the word right. Shall. They're writing it as if they're seating themselves. Mm-hmm. That.
Well, that's just a. Every open space has got to have.
Well, and that's the way we would read it. I don't think that's what was intended. I think that's part of the drafting issue here, the way shall is used.
Okay, so if, for instance, Troy, if they had come in with a plan last time and showed like a kind of a usable garden space, would you be okay with that or not?
For the way that one was particularly located, so close to that park, that would have worked better.
Right.
And also, just to have a garden that you can with the flowers and keep going doesn't really get it as a usable area. Mm-hmm. It becomes nothing more than a corridor. So you're right, they did come in with something a little more user friendly, so to speak. Not to plant your own stuff, but to sit and admire.
Yeah.
It's sung by the bees.
They're usually not the least seen.
I don't know. But there are a few things I know.
So it sounds like we might look at a combination of those two.
We'll have it and still have it loose.
Yeah. It's
really hard.
But, okay.
The one I had that's a big question is if you basically you'll do this when you run through with it, you get the syntax correct. Every once in a while, we leave out words like the, of, when. So I think when you run through it again, they're relatively easy. Things like maintenance of open space shell, responsibility of the, you know, like it's in the chart. Under open spaces, it's the one ownership and maintenance of open space.
Oh.
On the very first page, when you get over to maintenance of open space, shall be responsibility. The word be belongs in there.
Yeah, I think
there's
the opposite of
that. That was the code. Yeah, well, it pops up. Anytime that particular sentence shows up, it shows up a couple other times. It's missing the same B.
Okay.
The only real discussion item that I had running around was on open spaces, play areas for projects greater than 20 units, deleting the children's play area. So I was looking for a discussion of why we're deleting it entirely rather than leaving it as a requirement, and we couldn't do it as a requirement and somehow or other you get credit for it.
What section is that in?
It's on the chart, the green chart.
That was the old standard.
The old standard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in this one, it just proposed amended to delete that.
Yeah, the planning commission just, that was, seemed to be a consensus that I think it was.
I think they were dreaming that night.
2017.
Whoever those guys were. But the play area for multifamily and attached single family developments existing as a play area for children required for projects greater than 20 units. Proposed amendment, delete.
Hmm.
I'm not quite sure, warm and fuzzy with that. I couldn't come up with the
logic for it. What our logic was with that.
It could have been delete.
Well, no, I think it was just sort of a I think we were kind of talking about there was at some point it's sort of a requirement. You know, that you know, we were kind of going back to it. It almost started with the Garfield Street thing.
Yeah. I think it did, because that is not designed for families.
Yeah.
That's, you know, 500 square foot, one person units or two people units, probably not a family in those small little units. So would you require them to put a play area in? Why not have them?
I agree, but if you want the play area put in, then maybe this would be an area which you would get a bonus for doing it.
Yeah.
Because again, if you're building a senior unit, you probably aren't going to build it.
I'd like to jump in for the hell of it.
You could put that in place of the major recreation facilities.
Yes, maybe that's where it goes. Because I do think if
you have a couple of letters that said, don't take that out.
Well, what about
never mind the fact that no one's ever used it.
Yeah.
What about the standard we were just talking about, the surfacing and improvement standard? The common open space shall contain one or more of the following, and one of them is
play structure.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't want people putting in play structures just for the hell of it, so to speak.
But I don't think that they would match it to their residents.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And I think our questioning should.
Alleviate the problems.
Well, should we, I mean, if you want play area, should we provide, should it be in the bonus section and provide a bonus for that?
See, that's what I was thinking, provide a bonus.
Put it back in the PSO section.
And have the common open spaces as common as all the other estates, but give you a bonus if you're building a type of development that can handle it.
But the bonus is basically going to allow you to put more units.
Yeah, you don't want more units. You just want the place.
And if this is a family.
Well, the bonus might be you cut down the other area for common open space.
If it's considered as part of your open space, then
right.
It already is it doing that.
I mean, you're right. Already considered it.
If it's part of it, then it takes care of part of your requirement.
It can be. It can be part of the open space. It can be a structure of the open space.
Well, if we're going to put the play area in there, then what constitutes a play area? Do I have to put in just a small sandbox? Do I put in a slide? Do I have to have a jungle gym? Do I have to, what constitutes a play area? And then we're going to go back to the dollar value that we ran into, and I don't think we want to go back to the dollar value thing we were talking about in the major recreation.
So it might be
better to
just.
Well, if we're not allowing a bonus for it, it doesn't matter. It's just a play. You know,
you
it's
say
just
space,
something you can do in
I want
to. Yeah, play area could be with double boulders in the lawn.
But it doesn't say you have to do it. See, right. If it says, I want to say we struggled with that, is defining it. How do you define it? Well, then
you
really the only way I think you can is if you
want
to
the goal. I tell you my goal. Probably not going to get there, but what I'm saying in a roundabout way is if you're building 20 units or more and they're for families, you must have a play area. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Now, how you get there from here may be a challenge, but to do all this other stuff, that's the detail. But just think about it. You build a unit for 20 units or more. There is no play area anywhere other than an eighth of a mile. And that eighth of a mile is only if you live in the unit closest to the park. And it also takes away any type of parental supervision unless you go to the park too. So the goal is, now, how do we get there from here? Because we used to have it. And even though it may not always have been done the way perfectly, I think we do have several units around town that did end up with play structures in them.
And how do you determine if it's meant for families?
What's the
difference? You can only tell by bedrooms. Right. You know, if you're building a one-bedroom unit, you're going to get families in there, but it's not what I would call designed explicitly for them. Once you get to two, three-bedroom units...
So now we're just going to create another disincentive, though, for developers to build these two- and three-bedroom units, because now they've got to put a play structure in.
It doesn't have to be a structure, but we do need to define what that play unit is if you're going to do
it. What it could be. You can list a list of things that it could,
right.
It could consist of.
See, I don't know whether with Snowberry, did we never required this, I remember, any sort of play structure at all, and that is totally a family thing. All the stuff out of play, and even our new thing on play, we didn't take it.
I don't play.
Yeah, I think the idea is
you go play in the cottonwood tree around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Buy and tricycles.
And you fall out of the tree and break the leg into the city because we had it in the coach.
I'm going to put the plays in the garbage structure.
So do we have any consensus about how we want to approach this play areas or require it as part of common open space for projects greater than 20 units that are designed for?
I think it definitely needs to say area and not structure.
Yeah. That's what it really says. Yeah.
I would just be inclined not to because of the fact that we're having so much trouble getting those units built. I mean, I agree that I think it's a laudable aim. I just worry about imposing another requirement that increases the likelihood that these things won't be built.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If you put it in an area, somehow are you getting a bonus for it? Whether you get another parking space, whether you get another 2 foot on your unit, whether you... In other words, some way to get both the incentive to do it if you want to. But if you don't do it, you're not penalized for not doing it, so to speak. But if you do it, you get something out of it other than a thank you very much.
Yeah, then you'd have to put it back in the density bonus standards.
Is there any bonuses for density bonuses that would get put as open for the
density? I think the problem with putting in the density bonuses of folks who wrote the letters tonight that said don't do away with the major recreational facility bonus would probably argue kind of back to, well, why is it just play areas? Why isn't it, you know, a variety of major recreational facilities?
You could slap a sandbox in there. It'd be a pretty cheap bonus.
Yeah. Well, if it's play area, back when I was a kid, we usually ended up on a lawn. Right. We'd use the slide until we figured it out, or the swings, and as soon as we figured it out, we wanted something more creative, so we went to the lawn and started creating something, either through games or whatever. But
yeah, but the earth was still cooling then. But you may have a point considering that video games are such. This may be, consensus may well be this is just not a doable thing to do. It may not be cost effective either for the city and or for the developer. We can always, as we sit here and discuss things with the applicant, we can throw out a chrome and say we think you should put it in play structure and let it go. Yeah. Again, I see these things once in a while and go off my tangent. So I'm all for taking it out. It doesn't sound like it's a good or easy or profitable thing to do on either end, the city's end or developers' end or the public's end.
Were there any other comments on... We've been talking mostly about Section 1, the changes to the site design standards. Were there any more comments from Maria on... that section? It's the biggest section.
I have, I guess, my setback question, which, for example, definition of private open space on page 3, the end of Section 1. Eligible spaces include yards. It really doesn't address the issue of setbacks.
Yeah, so that... The way that's written, it could be any yard.
Yes. So it could be that little strip in front of your house right on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Parking strip? 6 feet deep up, 48 feet.
No, the front yard.
No, okay. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that's all right.
Every common space doesn't have to be that.
No, but it says the ground floor units shall be at least 6 feet deep and measured at least 48.
Where are you looking there?
On page 3.
3D.
Under 3D. Ground floor dwelling units.
Deck space yard should use 60 feet and 48.
So front yards.
Yeah. So if the front yard is deep enough.
It's deep enough and wide.
Then you can count the whole thing.
But again, maybe you don't want to use front yards.
Yeah, I think it would be side or rear yards would make more sense.
Okay.
Most side yards won't fit because most of them are only 5 feet.
Right.
So that scratches that. So if you take out front yards, period, and then leave the rest of the definition, then that'll cover it.
Let's keep catching on that.
I have a couple of thoughts on
that.
On the open space definition.
Well, let's get to the definition is back in section 4.
When you were talking, you said something earlier about the open space. When we said land or water with surface open to the sky and predominantly undeveloped unless otherwise specified. Well, the way it's written, it says specified. What Roger said was unless otherwise specified in this code.
Yeah, I think how that should read is it should start off at the beginning of the sentence, too.
And that way you know that
you can,
if you can do something based on this code, but otherwise specified, is that talking to staff and they specify something, or is that some policy paper that I don't have? But to limit it to this code, and then it goes on to say to serve the purposes of providing park and recreation activities. I know what that is. And to conserve natural resources, okay. And then to collect or treat stormwater, I know what that area is. But then I get to this, the fourth, structuring urban development and form for creating a pattern of development. Now,
well, that's because we use open space in that sense in a lot of areas of the code.
Well, in that sense, what do you mean? But I don't know what that means. I mean, I don't know how I use open space to structure urban development and form. I just don't know what that means.
Requiring yards, requiring setbacks, you know.
But that, you're going to do that by your zoning setbacks, by all your other standards in the code. See, the others are something.
There are places in the code that it's used in a very general and vague sense.
And well, that's where we've gotten in trouble up here when we start to debate guys.
But it's not a regulation. It's not a development standard for crime food. It's just somewhere else in the code where open space is mentioned, like in the purpose section. You know, the purpose of this, you know.
But it's still, I don't know what structuring urban development and form for
how high bulk and density, basically.
But then how high bulk and density is not open space.
How far density, you know, overall, everything is not.
It's not open space.
Density is not open. Well, it's the converse of that.
It's the unbuildable areas.
Creation of negative space.
It's negative space.
It's unbuildable areas between buildings.
It's just as bad as that.
All of a sudden, open space is becoming the creation of negative space within a project.
I put it on a couple of things.
I just think that it's...
Because they use open space in the sense that, I mean, because there are areas of the code where it talks about, you know, we want to encourage, you know, the purpose of this Cromanville subsection of the code. You know, one of the purposes is to create, you know, is for open space for, you know, public use and enjoyment. And it doesn't mean any of those other things. It doesn't mean natural resources or stormwater or.
Well, it's to create a pattern of open space that works to define urban form. I mean, you just need to say it differently.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's, you know, it's just like the old code that it creates opportunity for light and air.
Okay, but I know what light and air is. And I could see light and air. That's kind of like them. It's an area for light and air. There's an area for stormwater. There's an area for natural resources, but an area for structuring urban development and form. I'm just struggling with that.
Would you
need something general?
Would it work without?
What about the part that's just in parentheses that you said are creating a pattern of development?
Yeah, it's creating a pattern of urban development.
Yeah. Rather than the structuring of urban development.
Well, that works too.
More of the pattern.
Structuring urban development in form.
Yeah.
If you've got your right development standards based on setbacks, where you can develop whatever specific criteria that you can really get a handle on, if that's correct in the rest of the ordinance, that will happen, and you don't need that. If you're still working on that, that means something's wrong with your other standards.
We're not always talking about, when we use open space in the code, we're not always talking about development criteria for a specific development that you have to have this much open space on your lot. We're talking about, you know, the public spaces, you know, and all kinds of other things that the code talks about. And that's why you need something just general in there.
I mean, it's the spaces in between buildings.
It can be that.
Or creating a pattern of development with undeveloped areas. Something like that.
So I guess if
you create a pattern of development, if you say urban, half the people in Asheville will freak out. We don't want to be urban.
Well, we use it in another piece that we'll get to in a minute. But so what can happen will be when someone wants to go in a direction that really doesn't meet our policies or stuff, there's nothing really, they can read that to us and say, oh, you should accept that because it's structuring urban development form for creating a pattern.
That's the general definition of open space. They have to, when they come in for a project, they don't have to provide open space. They have to provide 50% common open space, 50% private open space.
If they have to do that, why do we need that? I just don't think we need it. I just think it's apples and oranges when you compare it to the other three. And whenever you get into a situation like that with apple and oranges, that's what makes our job difficult.
The support of positive I know it's got that qualifier in it, but that's what it is. It's like you're trying to.
I think
you're encouraging positive open space patterns.
Troy just hit it. I think when you use the word goal,
and we talk about open space in some of the goal sections of the code.
Yeah, but that's and they be in the definition.
In some of the purpose sections of the code, and so you need a definition of it. That's been our problem in a lot of things is we don't define terms.
Well, that comes close for me. It doesn't hit the nail on the head.
Well, I'm going to take a chance and stop here and hope that nobody brings it up in the future. Let's just leave it at that.
Before we have time to reword it.
I don't think we need to go there. I think that for what Roger's talking about, it works, and hopefully.
It's like in the normal plan, the normal neighborhood plans of group that are promoting a variety of housing types while preserving open spaces. You know?
I think both Croman and Normal use those open spaces as a design element that wasn't necessarily a recreational area or a creek corridor. Sometimes they were, I don't know, pearls or linked, you know, they sort of.
I'm talking about that.
It's just sort of the general purpose of the code.
Stop there.
All right. Anything else on that section? We can devil Maria there. Okay, how about the section two, which is the section about
Well, we did talk about credit for proximity to the park completely, and that's in section one, right? Were you saying there was a slide on that or something? The whole issue of the park.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the eighth of a mile?
Or
yeah, the eighth of a mile.
Yeah, that's in section one.
Yeah, I'd be in favor of eight.
Before we get on the distance, if let's say I have to provide 1,000 square feet, and if because I'm whatever that distance of the park is, I only have to provide 500. That 500 that I'm not providing, does that flip over and allow me to use it for density? Can I develop on it? If I do. Okay,
yeah, that's why the developers want it. Absolutely.
Okay.
Of course you can.
Okay, yeah. So that to me is with the bonus system that we have, and also the new all the new state legislation that allows in certain circumstances to create additional units within existing projects which weren't designed for those additional units when they were done. That here we are again, this can be used to shoehorn another unit. And I just think we've gotten to the point where it's getting so tight, and that's why we've struggled with some of the projects up here, why some of them have gotten appealed, that I don't know if we have any more flexibility to be shoehorning something else into a project unless we release some of the we release something else to allow this. And also, I think that that open space is important to projects because in this day and age, it's not as safe for somebody to wander that eighth of a mile or a quarter of a mile as it is to stay within the project. And even in certain circumstances, it's not even safe there. It adds a lot of people still say they could have a single family house with a yard in the back. They'd love to have it. They can't afford it, but they would like to have some space to take that away. And then also, the quote here is from Mark Knox. He says, especially in a compact urban town, he says, it's a great idea. Well, Lynn said, yes, he's a developer, so he just got a little bit more development. And in a compact urban town, I've never really heard a reference to an urban town. And most of the projects that we've approved where this would work are not urban. Garfield is not urban.
So, Marie, I'm not sure if it would allow more development because the underlying zoning provides lot coverage. They might be able to expand the private yard area because you don't have to do as much.
Could you get another
but you can't cover any more of the property.
In? Could you get another parking space in?
Not if it's paved, because that would be lot coverage.
No, but you
got relieved of 500 feet of open space.
But you still have a lot coverage requirement that maximizes what you can pave. So you have more open space anyway.
But a lot of our projects are under they meet the minimum density, but they certainly don't develop to maximum density. So
most of that's controlled by the park more than anything else.
Yeah.
But again, no, I agree. I'll gain units. I think I'll gain more private open space, but you don't gain any more units.
You wouldn't gain density.
Right, you don't get density. Density is covered.
You might make some bigger units. Units bigger than they were.
But you aren't going to add one more. You may add another square footage or two to the ones you have, or you may add a bit more private open space, but you really don't gain a unit. I don't see the math working there.
So are people in favor of leaving that proximity to the park in and changing it to an eighth of a mile?
Well, I only am if I know exactly how it plays out, sort of like it's just not clear to me.
It's not offering density bonus. It's not offering anything. So if you It's just saying you don't have to follow the same open space guidelines, so you wouldn't have to have it have your, like, you could have leftover landscape spaces that were less than 20 feet.
That could be truly landscape.
And they're just landscape, and you don't, it's, so it just relaxes some of your requirements. It doesn't give you density, and it doesn't give you more lot coverage. So it's actually, from an open space standpoint, at least from me as a designer standpoint, it's a positive. And it's not a positive. It doesn't create a more dense site. From a developer standpoint, it's probably just it relaxes the way they could design the space a little bit. But it doesn't get them anything.
So I think it's a positive. The best example was the last project we just looked at, the cottage group. Mm-hmm. It actually had that open space in the middle that they actually wanted to use it more as a garden layout, garden scape that you could kind of appreciate as a visual thing. But you couldn't run around it. You could walk through it, you could deal with it, but you couldn't run around it. But you could go right up the road a pace or right at the other end of the development, and there was all the runaround space you wanted. I think that last project, the one you weren't here for,
Yeah. There's
actually a perfect example of what that part of the relationship does.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to make sure that we're not so far away from it that it just is too generous.
I think that's it.
Eighth of a mile is good.
Right.
And so what about this dimensional thing of at least 400 square feet?
Does that
get rated by this?
No, so... So the common open space requirement is when you have 10 units or more.
Yeah.
If you're in R2, you need 0.75 of an acre for 10 units. You would have to do 2,614 square feet of open space. Half of that is 1,307. So you would easily, first you'd have to do 400 square feet at 20 by 20 area.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying, as long as that's the math, we're
not going to erode that requirement. It's not going to be an offset.
Right? Not the 400, but are we going to relax the minimum weight dimension to 15 instead of 20? That's what Troy was advocating for.
Not quite. But what is advocating for a minimum dimension that gives us flexibility for the size of the space to get still support the 400. I don't know quite why we're...
You don't want something that's 2 foot by 200.
Right.
So with having a minimum of 20 might be too much. But
right. 15 may be better.
But 400 is also just the minimum of this spatial area. So.
Well, the 400 would actually remain. What's the minimum width?
What the minimum dimension should be? You couldn't have a dimension less than 15 feet.
Right.
No, so it couldn't be 40 by 10.
So we took the 20 from the cottage, California.
Right.
Because it seems to be working well.
Is it working? If it works, don't fix it.
So 20 feet is just 2 feet longer than a regular parking space.
Right.
So if you think about it that way, it is not that big.
It's not that big.
You don't want to make it smaller.
Well, let's leave it at 20.
Yeah, because it's already working at the cottage. It's not broken.
If it's not broken, don't fix it. Okay, anything else in section one? This shit's hard to write.
I'll go back to before we leave the eighth of a mile, And also, I think that after listening to everyone else, that it gives some flexibility there that they could use that 500 feet for something else. But I also trust or feel that a number of developers will not use that provision to provide the required open space for marketing purposes. I trust a number of developers will do that, so I'm not going to say any more about that if it's an eighth of a mile.
Okay. Section two is about the density bonus, residential density R2 and R3.
Right.
The density bonus criteria for that. And
I
thing we talked about when we spoke is that it, which could otherwise be developed or sold as individual lots in section B there, F3B, needs to be lots or units. But whether people have comments on this? Now this is, we haven't said in this standard that that you can put structures in.
Well, this is really just an exercise of making the residential density bonus here the same as in performance standards options. So since this applies to R2 and R3, the standards we just went through will apply to those situations. There's two different parts of the code. So if we want to put structures in, I think that we'd be back where we were in section one.
Okay, should we refer back to that section or not? I mean, it also talks about developing it as a recreational amenity.
I'm sorry, where are you?
Same paragraph. It's in the existing language we used to take out. The purpose of the density bonus, which is... The purpose of the density bonus is common...
Oh, yeah.
Open spaces, turned area, which could otherwise be developed for some individual units to be developed as a recreational amenity. Is that okay? Is that consistent with our earlier?
I mean, that whole sentence honestly is old language.
Yeah.
That's been in the code a long time.
Why don't we just delete that whole sentence? Why do you have to talk about the purpose? If you've defined open space, common open space, and you say if you give more, you get a bonus, period. I mean, why do you have to say why? You know?
It's true, the purpose statement is kind of weird in the regulation.
In the ordinance, yeah.
Take it out.
I mean, then the question is, do we include still that it's not the purpose to permit decimals for... that have no realistic use by project owners. Again, that sort of gets back into the issue of how we're defining open space, those areas that can be used. So maybe we don't need to reiterate that.
Yeah, it's hard to think.
Yeah. Well, and it's also supposedly covered by our definition.
Yeah, it should be covered by
the definition. Well, the definitions don't cover it. I think what Maria is saying is that the Section 1, it's going to have to comply with Section 1 as well. So that will cover it. I'm not sure it does. So see, we at least refer back, and that section of code, we at least refer back to those standards we just talked about?
Well, but the definition says an area for the use of development of all residences of development or subdivision, such as recreational facilities, community gardens, or natural areas. So it's sort of saying what it is, the purpose of it, by saying that's what it is.
I think in the next sentence where we say a 1% bonus shall be awarded for each 1% of the total project area in common open space in excess of the base requirement, that should probably refer back to those standards, something like meeting the standards of that.
Yeah,
I think we need to refer back to that stuff if we want to comply.
Meeting the standards of the subsection.
H2. Not incidental part. Yeah. Okay, that was easy. And we had a couple of anything else on that section? We had a couple of letters that criticized us for deleting major recreational facilities. And that is a 10% bonus in the code that we are proposing taking out. No one has ever used it.
I think it's of academic interest to that particular individual. It seems
And at one time they were going to use it. And at one time they were going to use it, they decided not to build it anyway.
Yeah.
And skip the bus.
So we have conservation housing for 15%, 10% for common open space, and 35% possible for affordable housing. And no one ever uses that either.
No.
That's a little bit of pie in the sky. But what do we tell the council if then they say, well, why do you recommend taking that out?
Well, you want to leave the affordable housing piece in.
Yes.
Even if nobody used it, but the paragraph before, you want to take it out.
And what? I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just
well.
Well, I think part of what the commission talked about was, it mentions tennis courts, swimming pools, that those generally are things that haven't really been provided in private developments. Maybe partially because they often in Ashland tend to be infill developments that are probably don't have generous spaces to do larger kind of expensive facilities.
Swimming pools are a huge liability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why anybody would do that, provided and then the homeowners association would be strapped with that liability.
Oh, it's definitely a pie in the sky. So
yeah, it doesn't make any sense. The tennis courts don't get used as much anymore. Yeah. So it's like
pickleball courts.
Right.
Yeah.
It also has a real problem administratively.
It really does.
Total the project cost, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That last, second to the last sentence in that whole thing. So I think for taking it out, number one, it was really too ambitious for the bonus points. And the administrative of the total project cost should be defined as the estimated sale price and so forth, et cetera, can be an administrative nightmare.
Yeah. If anyone ever used it, it would be difficult.
Right. And then we'd be awfully different if they decided to. It's just a mess.
So did the tennis courts that went in, not on Skycrest, but the next street down, those were part of a subdivision approval for density? No, because those are big lots. But they did put tennis courts in there.
I think they just did that.
For fun.
For their fun, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's it, is that anybody that could really afford to do that would do it because they wanted to.
Could we say that our reason density is that we have all the possibilities for density, but if you add them all, you can't get them all. You got to pick which ones you want, and you're gonna get some number, and you may choose to use it all on one or a couple, but you. And when we looked at this 10%, that for somebody to get the 10%, they're going to have to take something off those other bonuses. And the fact that it doesn't get used, that we have infill development, and we feel that this 10% is kind of a luxury, that we would rather see the bonus points that could be used focused on the ones we already have. That could be a reason.
Yeah, this allows you to do up to a 60% maximum bonus, and you can only get to 60 with, if you use everything now without this, without that 10%, you'd have 60. 15 for conservation housing, 10 for
affordable housing. That's the highest anybody's ever got.
35 for affordable housing.
Has anybody ever got to 60?
Nobody's ever gotten except
so probably around 40.
And they probably had some affordable housing in there, didn't they?
They would have had.
Yeah, some of the earlier projects.
Yeah, so
conservation and affordable housing.
Yeah.
And
okay. Well, that answers my question. Thank you. I'll ask you. Section 3, the performance standards overlay. Included in their the ability to provide structures. In the common open space. Now, the definition sort of discourages, the definition itself kind of discourages structures and refers you to the rest of the code, where they're going to be allowed. So if we wanted to allow certain types of structures.
You're saying like gazebos?
Overhead structures.
Right. Yeah.
The structures, patios, I mean.
Right, I mean buildings, structures.
I don't think it restricts it. I mean, are you saying...
Well, the definition of open space restricts it.
Oh, because it says it's open to the air.
Open to the sky, unless otherwise...
Well, it discourages trees, too.
Yeah. open to the air, unless otherwise allowed in this land use code. So if we want to allow it or encourage it, we need to put that in.
So under, like... Yeah, so like under the natural areas, you could expand that.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think that things like...
Nothing over 7 stories?
No, I think that it should be open-sided. Like, if you do structures, it shouldn't be something that is conditioned space and it needs to be open to the air. So you could have an overhead, you could have posts, but you don't have walls...
You could have walls, but not an enclosed structure.
Right, not an enclosed structure. So you have to define that. But I think, you might want to have walls that are just 3 feet high, and then the rest is open.
So you could have walls that go
all the way up. They
have partial walls plus they're part of the support.
Right.
And so have it run up to the roof. That's what you're trying to do, is not have an enclosed structure.
Well, no, I actually don't think you want to have walls on 4 sides and have a
place.
That's
what I meant, enclosed structure.
Well, no, but you... So you need... It needs to be spent... Some time needs to be spent defining it. Because how many walls can you have then? And how much of it can be enclosed? Because...
Well, you can easily do a percentage of enclosure, and that would keep it from having...
Horizontal enclosure that is
vertical,
from floor to ceiling.
Walls, you can have walls up to 20%. No more than 20%.
Something.
A number, because consider that you can have a very nice supporting gazebo if you have a wall that's about anywhere from 2 to 4 feet wide. It goes up to the other side of the roof. You would carry the roofs on that. That could be something that only covers the 4 corners. You know, there are a lot of things you can do with walls, but what you would define is percentage of wall space that could be enclosed, which is something like no more than 20%.
So I think that covers allowing structures and still keeps them landscape
structures. Right, keeps it wide open as you want, but yet again. And sometimes in this area, it's not a bad idea to, especially if it's facing due west, to have a vertical wall that goes from the ground to the other side of the roof. But again, if you say you're going to be 20% of your total roof enclosure, that would give you the shade that you need, the enclosure you need. Again, around here, it depends on what your weather conditions are and the site you're building.
Would we also, would this language allow, I have a couple of questions. One is, should we also put in that section that, benches and seating areas are allowed?
Yeah, that's what earlier I was saying, that the common open space, this is what would cover single family detached subdivisions, hasn't typically had the same standards like we've developed for the common open space, and it seems like maybe we should just carry all of those over to this section.
Into here, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would, I guess that would work, but I think certainly allowing unenclosed structures of some type we need to have in there. Would this allow, if you had a site that was, it was not flat, for example, would it allow a raised deck?
Those are already allowed. It's interesting how that's
defined. In the open space.
Well, in a cottage open space, it was.
Yeah. I'm not sure it allowed it. I'm not sure our definition would clearly allow that in these natural areas open space.
If you had a flat patio in a sloping area, it should be allowed.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, if we carry over that standard that talks, there's some form that talks about improvements, you don't want the fees. It's kind of, if you look at recreational amenity or facility as something as like a deck or a gazebo, patio.
Have we had a structure in any of the developments we've moved forward?
Yes.
Yep.
At the one we saw first.
The one we first saw had
the one we prepared for. The property that's ripped with deck.
Yeah.
There's been some single family subdivisions that have gazebos too, Clay Creek Gardens.
That deck is great to people who really, it seems like the people in that, yeah, in that development really use that.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's the advantage of having one that's enclosed within. That's why I'm really trying to get those inside the development.
Because
you don't need to go anywhere, and it also has a tendency to build neighbors and neighborhoods where if you go to the park, everybody's included. You stay within your enclosure. If you left it up to me, I wouldn't allow the exterior parks to be used as part of the development required over space for that reason. They build neighbors, they build neighborhoods, they build things that you can't get with going to the park. You just can't get it that way.
I was very confused when I read 3A and then 3AI. So 3A says all developments with a base density of 10 units or greater shall be required to provide a minimum of 5% of total library in common open space, except as required in I below, which is right below. And then it talks about you have to give a minimum of 8% of open space, not common open space. So to me it was like I was confused because first we're talking about common open space and then we're just talking about open space. So it implies that where applicable to where it's a multifamily and attached single family housing development, the 8% supersedes the 5%, but then there's no common open space requirement.
Well, it points you back to the standards in our, what we're looking at, section 1H2.
Yeah. Okay. So
then they have to meet those common open space
requirements. 1H2, common open space. Meeting the standards of that open space. So that requires 50% of the 8%, so 4% now has to be common. So basically, you have to provide less common open space in an A1 development than you have to provide in an A development. You have to provide 5% under A, but only 4% common open space under A1.
Which
and that's the status quo.
That's what's been done, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause
we all think that's appropriate, or, I mean, why is it appropriate to require less common open space?
I think it's because you're generally, it's back to those examples of apartments. Our multifamily developments with townhomes, where you generally have smaller sites and more units. So it's providing those developments the flexibility whether to put that space, you know, once you meet the part 50% common open space, whether you add to that or put it in the private yard areas.
Okay. I guess there's a 1% difference. Okay.
It's on.
All right.
But these two, these performance standard options developments do tend to be little units.
Well, they're like the 1068 East Main.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they can range. Yeah, they have the past tend to be townhomes.
Yeah, I think when they're multifamily, they tend to be denser. Units like Phillips Corner, you know, it's 30 some odd units and they're common wall versus a single family performance standard development where it's detached homes and probably.
Well, which is already going to provide more private open space. You don't need to incentivize it. You can accommodate both 5% common plus that presumably larger amount of private.
And single-family zoned areas that were under performance standards happen to also have generally more natural features like slopes, trees, creek areas. They were tended to be undeveloped, but you can also do one in a denser multifamily zone, so you sort of give more flexibility of those common spaces, private spaces.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else on that section? The other section is the section about the section about the definition section. And my favorite definition, the definition of yard. But any other other than taking up my gibberish language about structure and urban development and form, do we have any other comments about that? Yeah, I did think that it was the email. In the general definition, I think we should turn that first sentence around and say, unless otherwise specified in this land use code, comma, the land and water and surface over the year, comma, and whatever. Just so it's clear that that clause applies to both those sections of that sentence.
Roger, where are you on that one?
It's the
green. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
I keep trying to follow you.
I think you cleaned up yard very nice.
Yeah, thank you. All right. An open space does not include areas such as streets, driveways, parking lot, common areas, street lights, parking, I think. I don't think comments need to do. Any other comments on that? Great. This is everything else.
Wow.
But it's mostly just going through and changing a word here, a word there.
Yeah.
It really is clean up, but I really want Alan and Jamie to look at it to make sure we're not missing anything. And then we'll go over that next time we look at this as a group.
Once is not enough.
But I think we made the hard decisions tonight. And thank you so much, Maria, for all that work. This was a bigger chore than it seemed when we started on this journey a year ago. Okay. Anything else? Can we go to the audience?
I just wanted to say real quick that tonight, you know, discussions here sure help. Having a landscape perspective, which we haven't had for a while. Michael,
thank you.
I'm talking about the
professional,
the sort of psychological. What are
you trying to get to?
I'm talking about the hard line. Is that okay to say?
I have another foot if you'd like to.
No,
as well.
Difference.
Yeah, where's your shoe?
No, I really appreciated Kelly's.
No,
Kelly's comments tonight too.
Thank you. It's fun.
Okay. Oh, good.
I'm here.
No, thanks for having a lot. All right. Welcome back.
Hi. I know.
Oh, hey, thanks, Tarek.
Oh,
right.
Oh,
that's a comfort.